Last summer, when the United States Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage, we celebrated a watershed moment in the struggle for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality. And as significant as that victory was, the struggle for equal rights, the struggle for simple equality under the law is not yet complete. Even though same-sex marriage is legal in all 50 states, 29, a majority of U.S. states, 29 U.S. states lack anti-discrimination laws that include sexual orientation and gender identity, and there is no federal law protecting access to employment, housing, and public accommodation like hotels or restrooms, which you may have heard a little bit about in the past few months. In the words of one activist, in a lot of places, you can now go to the county clerk, you can get a marriage license, you can get married, and then you can get fired the next week because now you are openly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Here in Maryland, a transgender rights law was finally passed in 2014, but work remains to be done in many surrounding states and in the country as a whole to ensure that the rights of, and specifically in regard to transgender, 1.4 million adults living in the United States today who identify as transgender. 1.4 million. In particular, there's been a lot of controversy around a North Carolina law passed in March that made it illegal for transgender people to use the public restrooms that match their gender identity. Well, the issue is not only North Carolina. To date, 21 states are suing the federal government over a directive to public schools on bathroom use by transgender students. Full disclosure, the single best advice I would love to give anyone regarding this debate is to just trust. Just trust that individuals know which restroom is most comfortable and appropriate for them, and that they don't need you to check with them, they don't need your permission. Just trust them. In the wake of these debates, I wanted to take just a little time to reflect this morning on the issue of identity and inclusion. Because here at UUCF, we are certified through what the UUA calls its Welcoming Congregation Program, an intentional process designed to dismantle homophobia and later expanded to include dismantling transphobia. It's significant that back in 2006, when this congregation became an out and proud LGBT welcoming congregation, only Massachusetts had legalized gay marriage, same-sex marriage at that point, which they did in 2004. The next state to do so was California. That didn't come along until summer 2008. It's good to remember and celebrate the times that we as a congregation were on the right side of history and that we were there fairly early in the process as a way of potentially inspiring ourselves when the next hard ethical choice comes along, because it always comes along. But even though we've been a welcoming congregation for a full decade now, in our heteronormative culture, there remains ongoing work for us to remain as authentically welcoming as possible, to really authentically be in touch and in right relationship with each person's, as our first principle says, inherent worth and dignity. In particular, given all the controversy around transgender rights, I'd like to invite us just to reflect a little bit this morning, particularly on gender identity, gender presentation, and inclusion. To briefly address the most basic terminology, I suspect most of you are familiar with the term transgender, and more familiar with transgender than cisgender. Have any of you never heard the word cisgender? Not surprising at all. I've actually said it from the pulpit before, but maybe you weren't here that Sunday. We'll hope that's the reason. The term transgender adds that Latin prefix trans, meaning on the other side of, to indicate a person whose gender identity or gender expression does not match their biological sex. Cisgender adds the Latin prefix cis, C-I-S, meaning on this side of, indicating a person whose gender identity or gender expression for the most part matches the biological sex they were assigned at birth. Speaking for myself, owning that label cisgender, just like owning, male heterosexual, white. You know, owning that label cisgender helps me to resist the all-too-common perception that transgender folks are the ones who deviate from the norm, whatever that norm is, instead of seeing that both cisgender and transgender are two among many legitimate points along a vast continuum that spans the diverse human condition. Along these lines, I'd like to share with you the single most useful tool I have found for understanding and for teaching others how they might better understand all these various identities that, and how they interrelate, of how we human beings can find ourselves in all our diversity. You know, it's represented by that ever-lengthening acronym, LGBTAIQ. You know, it continues on. So lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, asexual, intersexual, queer, questioning. Depends on who you talk to, even, as to what any of those letters stand for. You should have an insert in your order of service labeled not the gingerbread person, but the gingerbread man, right? Instead of the gingerbread man, the genderbread person. So if you'll take out that sheet. You may find, as I have, that this chart, it's available for free, just Google it. It's a helpful teaching tool for yourself, potentially for other people. It's an attempt to playfully visualize gender identity, gender expression, biological sex, and sexual attraction. The biggest aha moment for me from this chart was realizing that these four different attributes are each on a different and non-intersecting parallel line. And yes, I realize that parallel lines are by definition non-intersecting. But that any individual might identify at any point on the, so you might be on the left of one of them, right at the middle on another, on the far right of another, and then center. Anybody can be any combination, and you can start to see how people. To me, it was just helpful to have these four non-intersecting parallel lines to see that people can move to different places on one line, still be the same on others, or it can be any combination. That, for me, was the big aha moment. And I've seen that aha moment happen for other people as I presented this gender red person chart. I'm not going to go too much into depth with it, to just briefly walk you through it. If we start at the top of the chart, gender identity is in your mind. Inside your head, do you think of yourself, or does this another person think of themselves as more of a woman, a man, or somewhere in between? And that can be totally irrespective of who they date, how they present themselves. Well, how do they think of themselves in their mind? Your gender identity. Gender expression is that dotted line on the left. How do you present externally? In your clothes and behavior, do you present as masculine, feminine, androgynous, or gender neutral? This also can change, right? People who at one point in their life may have only worn dresses all of a sudden find themselves wearing pantsuits or blue jeans. And also to think about all these things that society puts on us as far as what, you know, and it's currently easy in our culture to be, if I can say this right, a more masculine female than it is to be a more feminine male, right? That biological woman can wear pants and dress in a suit more easily than I might wear a dress. At least so far, it's getting easier to present just however you feel like it. Is that really so radical? You know, to just people do what they do. Like that's the third category is attraction. It's in your heart. Are you sexually attracted to men, males, masculinity, women, females, femininity, neither or both? Finally, there's a spectrum regarding biological sex, and it's helpful to remember here in particular that someone who is intersexual has a chromosomal genotype or a sexual phenotype. If you're not sure what that is, flashbacks to high school geology. So, right, in your genes or in how you externally present yourself, genotype, genes, phenotype, external physical appearance, other than simple XY male or XX female. According to the Intersex Society of North America, if you ask experts at medical centers how often a child is born so noticeably atypical in terms of genitalia that a specialist in sex differentiation is called in, that number is about 1 in 1,500 or 1 in 2,000. So relatively common. But a lot more people than that are born with subtler forms of sexual anatomy variations, some of which do not show up until later in life. Now, on the other side of your order of service is an insert of 10 ways to be more welcoming and inclusive of transgender people. For now, I'll limit myself to highlighting only a few points on this list, but I invite you to reflect further on your own for any potential insights on this list for yourself, for UUCF, or potentially for other organizations or groups that you're a part of. Number one is a good starting point. Avoid making assumptions. Avoid making assumptions about gender identity or sexual orientation. You can avoid a lot of confusion, a lot of unintentional insults, and a lot of potential awkwardness by avoiding assumptions. Skipping to number three, do not assume a trans person wants to only speak about trans issues. Wants to speak at all about trans issues, or especially only about trans issues. A related mistake is to, you know, rush to introduce a new visitor who is transgender to another member of the congregation who is also transgender, or who you assume to be transgender. To risk being frank, and this is just a general best practice. I am by no means calling out us or our congregation, but it happens in groups that it's often made similarly with young people, with people of color, anyone who presents differently than the alleged norm of straight, white, cisgendered, able-bodied male. So you get things like, oh, let me introduce you to our other young person, like, or let me introduce you to our other person of color, and it's just like, it's not helpful. Like it's, it is not. It is a suboptimal, not best practice. So basically, treat people as human beings, right? This is just the general best advice. And get to know each person as an individual. Let that person reveal whatever it is about themselves that, you know, also don't assume that someone's white is another whole conversation we could get into. How people identify racially is also quite complex often. Two other quick things, you know, in listening to trans activists over the years, one trans activist says that his two least favorite questions are, one, are you done? So typically meaning surgery or transition or surgeries, to which he typically says, I'm not a Thanksgiving turkey. You know, like, this is a process. This is a journey, you know. And then second is the question, have you had the operation? Well, first of all, it's operations often, to which it's none of your business, right? This particular activist likes to say, well, I had my gallbladder out about 3 years ago. You know, we could just all be a lot happier and more copacetic as a society if just in general, you know, what other people have going on and which bathroom they go to, in their bedroom, below the belt. You know, it's just none of your business unless you plan to be intimately involved with that person. Just in general, right? It's none of your business. It's just simple etiquette, right? It's not transgender etiquette. It's just etiquette, right? So finally, as a way of highlighting how we are all on this ongoing journey of coming to know ourselves and one another better and all still just doing our best to struggle through how to build a beloved community where we all feel our own belovedness and feel authentic belovedness towards other people for who they really are amidst all our diversity and differences, I want to just quickly note that our closing hymn this morning is a beautiful hymn in my judgment, but it actually doesn't follow the best practice in number 5 on that 10 point chart to use terms that encompass all genders rather than two. So for instance, saying siblings instead of brothers and sisters for people who don't identify in this sort of gender bifurcated way. The reason is that our gray hymnal was published in 1993, which again, to be frank, is a point at which the UUA had had a feminist awakening, but was not fully yet conscious of transgender issues. You'll see a much greater sensitivity probably in the next few years whenever the next major UU hymnal is published. That's every 25 years or so, it's hard to say. For now, I'll leave you with a few thoughts inspired by Leslie Feinberg's book, Trans Liberation, Beyond Pink and Blue. The truth that gender is a spectrum that doesn't always match the biological sex that one is assigned at birth is a truth that is as clear to me as every little boy who has been teased for being a sissy, and every little girl who has ever been derisively called a tomboy. The need for greater gender freedom and greater gender fluidity is likewise as clear to me as the need to create a world in which no child is ever mocked for their gender expression, whether masculine, feminine, both, or neither. We already live in a world in which the race box is optional or has often been expanded to include many more options. The trans liberation movement challenges us that the gender box should also be optional, eliminated, or divided into many more complex categories. In the silence to follow, I invite you to reflect on how you individually or how we collectively may be called to build a more gender-liberated world. Quick final thoughts. The first is we recently hosted what we call an OWL training our whole lives here at UCF. It was particularly a training for facilitators of junior high and high school OWL. Our whole lives is our lifespan sexuality curriculum. And we were the two facilitators that were teaching, the teacher of teachers. One was a doctoral candidate in sex ed, and the other one was a PhD professor at a college in anatomy and physiology. So they were almost absurdly qualified to be teaching this. And one of the things I took away, I sort of knew this earlier, but just he drew it in a really, it's on my Instagram if any of you want to see the chart that he drew that I took a picture of, but he just showed in a really sophisticated way that when the sperm meets the egg, it's all the same number of cells, and then you just add hormones, right? And that it's this, and that it either becomes the boy parts or the girl parts. But there's actually exact correlates for everything. To keep it family friendly, I will not go into specifics. But my Instagram picture does, with words, not pictures, go into specifics. But just to know that all the parts and all the pleasures, they're all there, they're all possible. That was interesting just sort of from a sheer biology point, I think, about the gender spectrum that we don't always appreciate. It's also been interesting as so many of my friends are parents at this point in our increasingly gender-liberated age to watch them wrestle with, and I think some of you have probably experienced this or are experiencing it, of watching them, the whole, it's a boy or it's a girl. They're kind of like, well, biologically, but then it might be more complicated than that, right? And don't necessarily impose all of your, this pink culture, this blue culture. And of course, that's all more complicated and changes with time too. So like if you go back and look at images of the Virgin Mary from the Christian tradition, what color is she always presented in? Blue, right? The blue used to be a feminine color because it was cooler, and red used to be a masculine color. It was warmer. Or think about what color is Mary Magdalene presented as? Red, right? What does that say? So she's this masculine, aggressive female. So all this color coding is, it's subtle. It's been with us, but it also changes. It's also, there's so many ways. Many of you have heard me say about racism before that racism is real the way that Wednesday is real. And it's also a social construction, the way that Wednesday is a social construction, right? Because 99% of us we are 99.9% plus the same on the DNA level. And we've just chosen to build this huge racial edifice on top of skin color, melanin. And this, it's the same with gender, that we've taken this. It is a social construction in many ways. Now, our proclivities to do certain things that have been gendered may be more genetic to us. But, just study the barest introduction to anthropology, and you will see how gender is a social construction that changes from society to society, which means we can change it, right? We don't have to limit these things. I mean, look at the Olympics to see a tremendous example of how much is possible when four genders. So with that being said, continue to think on these things, to engage the diversity of the world, and as you continue your journey, continue it with love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place of hope, of love, of peace or joy, that goes with you out into the world. We're different for having spent this time together. So live boldly and with thanksgiving. Go in peace.